have to go to work. It's actually later than it should be and I need to go, but I have that bug where I have to talk about things before I can go. I've got like things on my brain and I have to say them. So I'm going to say them really quick and then I'm going to go. I hope that I'm quiet enough that I don't wake up my kids, because I really don't want to wake them up. They need sleep. They were super grumpy yesterday. So I'm going to try and just keep my mouth shut. Well, that's not true at all. I'm going to talk quietly. There we go. I couldn't keep my mouth shut to save my life. So three things, and then a fourth thing, and that's the actual main part of the episode. Really cool little study from BYU that finds that Disney princesses actually give a lot of value to the girls, young girls who watch them. So they went through and like categorized these people into, you know, the people who get virtuous things from Disney princesses. And some of them just like, you know, princesses themselves and dressing up and being royal and all of that stuff. And others of them, they, you know, hey, they fulfill their dreams. And I think one of my favorites is the empowerment girls, that there are these bold, audacious girls who are, or princesses, I guess, who are doing these really cool things and living life on their terms and willing to disobey even their parents if it is for the right thing, right? And so these BYU professors have actually found that when you talk to young girls about what they are learning, what they talk about are all of the really positive things that they're taking away. A new BYU study shows that pre-adolescent girls ages 8 to 12 are taking away lessons of empowerment and recognizing the positive attributes of Disney princesses. First of all, that's cool because I love Disney, but second of all, what a weird age we live in. That like, my default was, oh yeah, Disney princesses are probably really bad because they, you know, they stereotype and they teach girls about how they need to conform to societal expectations. I had this whole thing in my head about how evil they were. And when I saw this, I went, oh, duh. We're just a very cynical time. We're in a very cynical time. And that's not a good thing, right? By the way, I could go on a whole rant about how important media is and how if we watch stories about people doing bad things or even just like not having purpose or, you know, like Disney films are actually incredibly powerful to me because they teach a lot of really important lessons about true identity and how you have a purpose and a mission in life. And there's just a lot of really good stuff underneath it. I remember there was a study. I can't remember if it was Sesame Street, if it was Daniel Tiger, but one of those found that if you do a typical plot for very, very young children, like 2s and 3-year-olds, that, you know, that you need some conflict for that plot, right? So there's got to be the building action and then climax, and then it kind of resolves. And they would do things like two friends would start fighting and then they would fix it with each other and then they would go home and everybody was happy. Well, the 3 and 4-year-olds would of course then start fighting, right? And then they would turn around and say, oh, I'm sorry, can we fix it now? But they would just fight more. And like, because they so clearly mimic what they are seeing on TV, it was actually really important for them to stop doing all of the resolution and just to say, okay, let's just show them what they should model. When they're older, it's a perfectly fine because they can understand it a little bit better. But when they're younger, they just need to model that. I think the media we consume is incredibly important. I think it shapes the context of our lives. And it's something that I could talk about. It's why I love filling my kids' brains with fairy tales. And I can't wait to read Tolkien with my kids. And we already are big fans of C.S. Lewis and lots of other things. It's very, very deliberate, very intentional. I want them to read really, really great literature because there's so many good things out there. I find this to be really interesting. And I also think that the civility note here is, if you become so cynical that you can't see any good in the world, then you'll be surrounded by evil all the time. And you can see this politically, right? There were people who honestly believed that Mitt Romney was evil and horrible and terrible and hated women. And, you know, I've talked about that at length in the past. Okay. When you get to the point where you think all politicians are evil, only evil people will actually run. So you actually have to make it an effort to look for the good in society, to look for the good people in politics, to see the good even when you don't agree. So that's number one. Number two, this one's funny. There was a tweet of a university student who wrote a not very good essay talking about current events and how, yes, Black Lives Matter, but all lives matter. And also, what about black on black crime? Okay. And they go into this at length, and it's a 2 or 3 page paper, and it goes on Twitter, which is probably the worst thing in the world. I don't know how people got this essay because it's really sad. I cannot imagine any essay of mine being ready for the scrutiny of Twitter. Okay, even my harshest professor is not as harsh as Twitter is, right? But independent, like this person's essay was found and it was, you know, publicized and everybody saw it. And of course, the rah, rah, rah began. I can't believe how horrible this person is. It's so privileged. It's so racist. And their grammar isn't even good. I just want to make an observation about growth mindset really quick. Okay. Growth mindset is saying those are precisely the people that I want to teach in the university. We're coming to this very weird place in society where if the sick go to the doctor, people look at them and say, but why were you even sick to begin with, you horrible person? And it's like, this is why they're there, to get better grammar and to think better and to not say dumb stuff like, well, what about black on black crime? That's exactly what I want them to do. I want them to go to university and engage. And I want them to be, you know, confronted with very uncomfortable opinions that push them and make their thinking better. And so I think that's a really, let me add one other thing. I was talking recently with a friend of mine, conservative, I should say center right, right? From what I can tell. And they just said in passing, you know, I really believe in Black Lives Matter. Well, I mean, I believe all lives matter. But, you know, I think the message of Black Lives Matter is good. That was the sentence, okay? I believe in Black Lives Matter. I mean, I believe all lives matter, but Black Lives Matter is essentially a good message. I thought to myself how many people would condemn that person for being horribly racist. Now, let's dive into that a little bit. It is very clear that some people use All Lives Matter as a response and a rebuke to Black Lives Matter. It is literally a way of saying, I don't like Black Lives Matter, I disagree with it. And so if you actually look at, you know, there's a guy in Salt Lake during a protest who gets out of his car, screams All Lives Matter, and then takes a crossbow, I think, and starts shooting people, right? The guy's crazy, but like, he was not saying All Lives Matter. He was saying, I don't like Black Lives Matter. So yes, you were completely right. There are many, many times when people are saying All Lives Matter, but what they really mean is I am against Black Lives Matter. I don't agree with that movement. Okay. So with that out of the way, there are also a lot of people who, when they hear Black Lives Matter, they say, can I be more inclusive? There are a lot of people who hear Black Lives Matter and they say, you know, in the United States, we have been taught that we're all equal before the law, that it's important to believe everybody and to, you know, everybody has human rights and dignity and everybody has an equal voice and an equal vote, right? These are very deeply egalitarian things that we have been taught. And so when somebody hears Black Lives Matter and they say, well, yes, and I think all lives matter, that may not be, it may be that they're just using the wrong words, that they don't know the lingo. It may be that they are just defaulting to, by the way, very good traditions of egalitarianism and inclusiveness, and that they may not be the heart of all racism, and that the first jump to condemnation is not actually helping anybody. That doesn't mean that you have to agree with them. In fact, I don't think I agree with them, right? The reason why Black Lives Matter is a powerful protest is precisely because some people aren't being treated right. I have no issue with that. But what I'm saying is growth mindset means that when you see somebody say something wrong, you have two options. You can say, oh, well, they're fundamentally evil and flawed and horrible, or they have not arrived yet, and I might be able to play a role in helping them get there. It's a little bit arrogant to assume that I can help other people, but, you know, let's just run with it. So when somebody says all lives matter, maybe the response could be like, hey, can I dig into that with you a little bit? And by the way, I should also be clear. Many of my friends on the left do a very good job of doing just that. So I don't want to caricature them either. Twitter does not do a very good job of being nuanced and thoughtful and saying, hey, tell me more about why you said that. All right. So that's number two. So first was Disney princesses. Second was the essay. And the whole point of the essay is I want to engage with people like that. I want to talk to people in the university just like that. Third one, and then we'll get to the main point of the episode. The president recently announced that he is going to end all funding, all federal funding for implicit bias training and racial justice training. And it was very interesting to watch as I had just finished talking about cultural pressure points and bad actors, and the internet exploded with rage. And on the left, it was, I work in that work. Can people not see how needed it is right now? And on the right, it was, I've been to those trainings. They feel more like brainwashing than anything else. They're terrible and they make me feel guilty for who I am. I am so glad that I am seeing these go away. This might be the most powerful pressure point I know of. In fact, I would argue that in 2016, the pressure point was not Black Lives Matter, the biggest one. The biggest one was actually white privilege. White privilege helped Donald Trump win. I fully believe that. And the reason is because it was so poorly explained so many times, and yet there was some good in it, that the left was very passionate about talking about privilege at every opportunity they had, and the right was frankly just irritated by it. Now, you can call that white fragility. I think that's minimizing it. I really, if you look back, there were some very condescending, very maladroit ways of addressing the issue that came through. Privilege was mishandled, and it was done very poorly. And some people will say, well, you should be mature. This isn't about me. I didn't vote for Donald Trump. Right? People are not mature enough, and you have to think about how you deliver the message. And if that irritates you, well, I'm sorry. I can't do anything about it. I'm describing how I see reality. I'm not saying that it should be that way. Okay. So Donald Trump says he's going to end all racial bias training. Now, let's dig into this for a second. What power does he actually have to defund? Maybe federal agencies and District of Columbia public schools, maybe, which is probably 1% of all racial justice trainings that are happening in the country. This is basically zero policy. What is it really about? It's about division. It's about culture wars. It's about cultural pressure points. The entire purpose for why he is doing this is the outrage. Because the people on the right who can't stand these trainings, who think that they're awful and just stupid and brainwashing and, you know, neo-Marxist conspiracies, they are thrilled with the president. And they can momentarily forget that he's a terrible person that's intentionally sowing division, that isn't a very good conservative. They can forget all of that because, hey, I sat through one of those trainings and I hated it. And I felt bad about who I was as a person. And on the left, how many people were about to vote for Trump that this really flipped? Nobody. There's not, like, there are Republicans for Biden. There are not social justice training leaders for Trump. That is not a pack, right? There is no political action committee for people who believe in equity and equity trainings who are also going to vote for Trump. Like, that's not a thing. So he loses zero and he gains everybody on the right who is now energized by saying those trainings, I hate those trainings. They were awful. Okay. And to be clear, I walk a middle road on the trainings themselves. I think there's, you know, again, what good can I take from this? That's always the question. And if there's good you can take from it, you're obligated to do so. That doesn't mean you have to believe everything. You know, it's a cafeteria training. Take what's good and leave the rest. And I've been to some that are terrible and I've been to some that are great. Frankly, I think all of the ones that I went to actually could have been great if the context had been better. Anyway, I won't get into that. You don't care about the trainings I've been to. Okay. But that's number three. And again, like, this is happening everywhere. And the left is very frustrated that the right is engaging in this, but that's kind of where they learn this from, right? Again, this goes back to Breitbart. And not that he is, I mean, he's passed away a number of years ago, but people have learned now that if you want to win a political battle, you win on the cultural landscape. The cultural battlefield is the one that matters. And so whether it's, there was this super weird, like, Twitter battle between Candace Owens and Cardi B. And I only saw a little bit of it. And then I walked away because it was mostly just entertaining, but everybody was super angry. And I was like, all right, first of all, like, don't engage with Candace Owens when you have a big following, because even if she only wins 10%, she's still like, you only have something to lose. Like, you're not gaining from this. And some people will hate that because that sounds like a criticism. It's not. I don't really care about this. But again, the whole point was to have a fight. The point was the division. The point was to have an argument that is spicy online so that people see it and they have to engage with it. That's how we do it. Because right now, publicity is not about paying for time on television. It's for grabbing people's attention. And that was clickbaity. And that's how we do it. And that's what Donald Trump does. He knows that he can't pay, or he doesn't want to spend his own money on ads. So instead, he stokes controversy. He knows that there's power in resentment. And that's what he does. So the one thing that I can say is, I don't know the full way around that, but one way is to look for the good in the world. One way is to take the middle road on these really weird cultural issues, like equity trainings, which I am not intentionally taking the center road. This happens to be how I actually feel. There is some good in them. There is also some bad in them. I would like to see more evidence that they are actually delivering what they intend to deliver. I think if everybody in the country went through racial justice training, I do not think that we would solve racism. I think what solves racism is repentance, right? And trying to play religion in public school trainings is a fool's errand and can be dangerous. Okay, and it can lead to really perverse outcomes that cause all sorts of problems. That doesn't mean that the people engaged aren't extremely motivated and extremely genuine. Every person that I've met who facilitates these trainings is doing so in a heartfelt way. But again, whether you like my take or not, that's not actually what I'm here to argue. What I'm arguing is Donald Trump is very good at finding the cultural pressure points and pushing, and he pushed on that one, and now everybody's freaking out. And if you are, so there's a guy I follow. He's an expert on school funding. Bruce Baker, I think he's at Rutgers. And he basically kind of put on some outrage and said, this is illegal. He has no right to do this. Of course it's illegal. He knows that. He's not actually trying to cancel all of the equity funding. He can't get in the way of a school district in, you know, West Dakota. This is not a thing. He knows that. That's not what it's about. It's about free publicity. And everybody fell right into his trap. And they were like, this is outrage, outrage, outrage. Fine, be outraged. But realize that there's very little that he's actually going to be able to do. This is about making people mad. And making the right people mad so that they vote for him. And the wrong people, well, it doesn't matter if they're mad. Because, you know, just plays into his little narrative of make the liberals cry. There's somebody down the street from me who has a flag that says, make liberals cry again 2020. Now, I think it's awful. But like, I don't think it's keeping Donald Trump up at night that liberals are upset. I shouldn't call them liberals. I don't think they are. That the left is upset. It's not what's going on. The point is the division. That's the purpose. That's part of why I can't vote for Donald Trump, which is the actual point of why I got on here today. So let's go to that, because then I got to go to work. All right, let's talk Donald Trump. there's a website that I really want to buy. Costs $2. It's insufficientlyconservative.us. And in my head, what I want to do is the front page is the conservative challenge. And then there's a bunch of menu options like school choice and abortion and free trade and a free economy. And, you know, you just go through, you know, big 10 areas of politics, immigration, you know, whatever, healthcare. And what I would do is I would give the challenge right up front and say, this is for those who are conservative who are thinking about voting for Donald Trump. So first of all, if you're super MAGA, you're not going to listen to this because you've already decided. And that's fine. I respect that. Okay. If you are super left, you're going to be like, why don't you just vote for Joe Biden? That doesn't work either. Let me explain why. I like Joe Biden. I really do think he's a decent person. I actually have a lot of respect for Kamala Harris, too. I don't agree with either of their policies. And there is a line that everyone has to draw at where they're going to say, I can't vote for that person. They disagree with me on really, really important fundamental issues. I think I'm there. I think I'm at the point where I don't think I can vote for them. That doesn't mean I hate them. That doesn't mean I think they're evil. I think that there are some things they believe that that I have a hard time with. And I respect that there are a lot of people out there that feel similarly. A good friend of mine, he's on Facebook. This morning he said, look, I get that you don't like Donald Trump, but to me, abortion is a very serious issue. And it is an issue of life, and it is an issue of protecting the most marginalized among us. And he gave a very eloquent defense of why he's voting for Donald Trump, and it basically boils down to abortion. Okay? I don't agree with him, but I can understand where he's coming from. And I know him well enough to know that he's being genuine about it. Okay? So, those types of people who may be holding their nose a little bit and voting for Donald Trump, or who are on the fence and aren't sure what to do, here's my challenge to them. Okay? The challenge to them is to say, is three steps. First, only vote for a president if they're conservative. And I don't think Donald Trump fits that bill. Not even close. Not in his personal behavior, not in his presidency, not in his politics, not in his policy. Okay, I would encourage them not to vote for Donald Trump. And if you can't vote for Joe Biden, fine, I respect that. Vote third party or just don't vote. That's probably where I am. But the time that I could have spent worrying about who to vote for president, I'm going to pour into, and this is step number two, I'm going to pour into local and state races. And I'm going to look for people who are constitutionalists. Conservative, yes, but conservative changes. That meaning changes every few years, and I don't ever know what it means. So instead, I'm going to look for people who uphold the Constitution. I'm going to look for people who reflect my values, because at the end of the day, if they reflect my values in state and local, then that restricts what the president can do that could be bad. That's a good thing to me. Why not vote for the left? Won't they constrain him? Yeah, I don't think so. Their view of government is we just need the right people in, and then we need to have a very powerful government that can do whatever it needs to do to help people. I don't take that view. I don't think it is wise. I think history teaches us that getting the right people in is exceptionally difficult. And as soon as you do, there's somebody behind them with a gun. It is better to have a limited government all the time. And I'm a little bit surprised that the left can't see this. The one thing that I am grateful for is that for generations, Republicans had said, we need to limit the power of the executive. We need to limit the power of the executive. That there are so many things that Donald Trump wishes he could do, but he can't. So the second thing I want to do is look for constitutionalists. And by the way, that can include people on the left. I don't see a whole lot of them because that doesn't appeal to people on the left quite as much. But if there are some, I'm happy to vote for them too. Certainly isn't about party. Okay, it's about voting for real constitutionalists and real conservatives. Okay. And that includes on other areas too, like on immigration. And by the way, right now, I say this as kindly and genuinely as I know how to say it. I think I am in a place where I don't know which party is more conservative, because the right has now become this very weird populist party of resentment. And if people are spewing those intentionally divisive lines, that's not somebody I can vote for. So the three parts of my challenge so far are: don't vote for president unless you can vote for a real conservative. And right now, I can't. Pour that extra time into voting for state and local races that are going to be constitutionalists. And third, and this is perhaps the most important, and I hope that this is one that even my most MAGA of MAGA friends can join me on, and even my most left of left-leaning friends can join me on. I don't know how close this election will be. But I do know that as it gets closer, we are going to have a problem. And if it is close enough, we're going to have a very serious problem. That one side is going to feel cheated. Now, if you think that I'm overstating things somewhat, let me be clear. When George W. Bush won in 2000, I believe it was the election of 2000 against Al Gore, I remember years later, Hillary Clinton stood in front of a crowd and said, when I think she was running for president at the time, she said, well, we all know that election was stolen. Now, let me be clear. I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was stolen. I have never gotten into that. And so you'll forgive me if I'm a little bit ignorant on that. What I can tell you is, and this is really important, that in the United States, when one person wins, we move forward with that one person being in power. And so my commitment is, if Donald Trump loses, he leaves. And if he wins, he stays. Independent of what I might think of him, we stand for the right thing. And that means that my friends on the left, if it is clear that Donald Trump wins, and by the way, crazier things have happened because he already won, then we say, I despise him, I don't like him, but he won. And he is the legal president, no matter how much I may be angry about it. And to my friends on the right, if he loses, he doesn't get to stay for a second term. Period. And anybody who takes up arms in the opposite direction is not just a fool, not just stoking incredibly dangerous fires, but is literally a traitor to the Constitution. We have a successful and peaceful handoff of power in this country. That's who we are. That's what we do. Okay. And so whatever comes this November, no matter who wins, we make sure that we stand by the person that wins, whether we like them or not. And we stand for their right to serve as president. Now, and this is really important. What about allegations of cheating? See, this is the problem with living in this digital age. People are going to come up. I'm sure that there are people on both sides who've already come up with a list of, well, it's not fair because, right? And they are ready to go. They are ready. You know, you'll forgive me for talking about something that's, I don't want to say macabre, but a little bit, you know, certainly sensitive. A little bit almost inappropriate. Okay, it is well known that CNN and a lot of the news carriers have already put together multiple hours and probably multiple days of coverage for when the Queen of England passes away. And let me be clear, I hope she lives a very long life. I'm not hoping for that to happen, nothing like that. But the reality is that there's tons of footage already ready to go, because as soon as it happens, they know they need to be ready. Okay. In the same kind of, and again, I'm not commenting on the Queen or her health or anything else like that. Okay. In the same way, there are people right now that are coming up with reasons for why the race was unfair. Well, it was the mail-in ballots. Well, I think it was because of the identification requirements. It was because of whatever. And they're going to keep going. They're testing now to find the most salient points, the points that resonate the most, and they're going to use it in a few months. And so right now you have to decide what counts as cheating and what doesn't. And we have to be there now. And we have to agree on it. We have to agree on it now. And if Donald Trump wins and the allegations of cheating are minimal, then we have to understand that that comes with the territory here. Okay? We have to do the very best we can, and we have to think through, well, what if there is large-scale evidence of cheating? What are we going to do then? I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet. But what I do know is, independent of whether there's large-scale evidence of cheating, somebody's going to be upset. Somebody's going to claim that there was cheating. And at that point, we simply have, like, this is one of those cases where, yes, it is better to be unified than to be right. Because in 4 years, we'll get another chance. Now, I also want to be clear. I don't think you'll find anybody who dislikes the president more than I do. I wish he had never been elected the first time. I think if ranked choice voting was a thing, he never would have been elected. But that's not where we are. And as shocked as I was that he won, I remember waking my wife up and saying, it was early in the morning and I had to get to work. And I said, it's Trump. And she shot straight out of bed and said, no way. I said, I'm not kidding. I have this bad habit of smiling when something is crazy to me, and it makes it look like I think it's a good thing. It's not. That's just what I just, like, I can't believe that just happened. Like, what? And I had this enormous crazy smile on. I was like, yeah, Trump is the president. Okay. Come November, anyone who claims to be conservative, a constitutional conservative, needs to be willing to stand for what is right. And if the president is elected, then we stand by him. And if he loses, we stand by that too. It is absolutely critical. Now, one other thing. I suspect that some people are bothered by the idea of me not voting because I'm not voting the way that they want. I'm not voting for Biden, and Biden is the only way to protect us from a fascist future. Or perhaps I'm not voting for Trump, who's the only thing keeping us from a communist future. I don't know. Fine. I want to go just a little bit in my last minute or two here on that issue. And it's pretty simple to me. I think it might be good for me to step back from the altar of politics for a while. Not completely. I have an obligation to my country. Right? I need to vote. I need to be engaged. But there is a point at which the conversation around the president and the popularity contest and the celebrity is actually not helping. And reminding myself that that's not, that the president is somebody that, you know, politics is a necessary evil. I have to do it, and then I have to get out of the way. Politics is what lets us do the most important things. The most important things are my family and my faith and my job and my life, right? And for too many, politics has become our life. And so stepping back and saying, I'm not going to engage in that because I have two bad options. And I, by the way, in case anybody's wondering, I think one option is far better than the other. I'm just not sure if it's one that I feel comfortable putting my name to. Okay. There was a tweet that I saw that I quite liked. It was to Christians, and it said, if you feel uncomfortable in the political sphere, you need to understand that's exactly where you should, what you should feel. Because we don't have kings, but one. And I think there's something really powerful for that, whether you're a Christian or not. Politics can consume everything. We're there, by the way. We need not to be. Politics is not the most important thing, not even close. And so maybe taking a break from it and saying, I'm not here for this, just for the presidency, everything else I'll vote for, might be a good thing. Because then I can also say, I did not vote for president and it was on purpose. And the reason I did not was because I did not feel comfortable putting my name to any of the people involved. And then I can continue to speak out on issues of conservatism and constitutionalism. So that is what I will probably be doing. Again, I'm not totally sure. Maybe I'll end up voting for Joe Biden. I'm leaning towards voting for nobody, but it's still possible. If he got a plan together to actually take on the debt, that would help. If he showed that he was willing to moderate on issues of the far left, that would help tremendously. If he showed that he is serious about asking people to do everything in their power and take personal responsibility and realize that politics is not the answer to their personal problems, that would be a huge difference. So there are things that could be done. But as of right now, I think stepping back from the altar of politics is a good way to go. And I hope somebody will join me. I don't know. I talked to a friend about this idea and he said he quite liked it. Somebody that I respect tremendously. I look up to him a lot and he just said, you know, maybe not voting for president is the right way to go in protest. And then for everything else, committing to whatever happens in November, standing for the rule of law and the peaceful transition of power, that feels right. Feels like the right thing to do. So I guess in that sense, it's whoever wins 2020, that's the flag I should have outside my door. Whoever wins should be the president. Radical Civility is written, produced, and edited by Benjamin Pacini. The views expressed on Radical Civility are only the views of myself, not my employer or my faith or my family or my church or anybody else. That is particularly important today because I am talking so directly about politics. Okay, these are only my views, and I would love nothing more than to find out that I was wrong in the future when I'm older and wiser. But I'm trying my best, and I don't think I'm completely off. I think I can feel it deep in my bones. So, anyway, fingers crossed. Go do some good in the world. Be well, everybody. Bye.